It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12, and by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And welcome to this edition of Youth Sports Now. Thanks for that introduction, Bob Savage. I am Greg Camp, the lifelong Little Leaguer, and your host for this next edition of Youth Sports Now, where we try and give out the best information and knowledge about youth sports, the well-being of our athletes, and we are totally dedicated to that well-being of the youth sport athlete from peewee all the way through the college athletic scene. Hey, look, you know, I have to admit, on a personal level, bringing up the topic of concussions again is sometimes getting a little bit repetitive, and I wonder, are we doing right by you, the listeners, by constantly talking about these concussions? And yet, at the same time, new information is constantly coming out about concussions. And, you know, it is our job to provide you with the newest information and details about concussions and how they relate to youth sports. Well, you know, we are seem to be in this culture of resistance for the kids to telling a coach or a parent that they might have a concussion. And there is a new report from the Institute of Medicine and National Research Council. It's a 306-page report. It is called Sports-Related Concussions in Youth, Improving the Science, Changing the Culture. Well, it was released this week, and even though that there is an increased willingness to report concussions, there's still this desire on the part of athletes not to report it because they feel they're letting their teammates down, and on the part of the coaches because it upsets the team that they have on the field, or their own belief that I had these when I was a kid, I'm okay, it's just part of the sport. And certainly on the part of the parents who want to see their children excel and to be accepted. Dr. Robert Graham is the chair of this committee that wrote this new report. And he goes on to say that the number of individuals age 19 and under treated in emergency room departments for concussions and other non-fatal sports and recreation-related traumatic brain injuries has increased from 150,000 in 201 to over 250,000 in 209. So the question that I have to ask and that we have to ask here at Youth Sports Now is this due to an increase in awareness or reporting of concussions? Well, part of the answer is we really don't know, because the true incidence of concussions, as several concussions go unreported, as well as the lack of consistency in terminology with different studies that have been reported and different definitions of the concussion. So a lot of this stuff from this new report, the committee advises that a concussion athlete should return to play only when he or she has recovered and is no longer having any symptoms. But current research does not suggest a standard or universal level or of duration of rest needed. So there's still a lot of questions out there. So when we come back, we're going to have a guest who has been with us before. His name is Phil Steckley. Phil is the sports athletic trainer for West Irondequoit School District, and he's the guy at the front line. Whether the high school athlete is on the practice field or on the field of play, Phil is the guy who is out there seeing these things happen firsthand. So we're going to be talking with Phil about the concussions and some of the common facts and myths about concussions from the expert who sees it, you know, I don't want to say every day, and hopefully it's not every day, but he's the guy who sees it firsthand. So when we come back on Youth Sports Now, Phil Steckley, the athletic trainer at West Irondequoit School District, and once again, we talk concussions, whether it's fact or myth.
Peak Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
It's been an exciting night of Pee Wee Hockey, Billy.
These kids have really played their hearts out tonight, Jim.
And now in the stands, two mums drop their mittens, and it looks like they want to go. It's Porter's mom and Smith's mom. Smith's mom gets in two right hands.
Porter's got a real big size advantage in this one.
Now Wilkinson's mom comes in from behind. Wilkinson posts Porter's cashmere sweater over her head.
I tell you, that's got to be one of the most unladylike things I've ever seen.
We got parents tearing up everywhere in the stands.
Absolute mayhem.
Relax. It's just a game. A message from USA Hockey.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
There's only one little league where 500,000 girls can play their hearts out and be seen by the world. Little League Softball, televised nationwide in four divisions. Join a real Little League. Sign up today. Little League rules for a reason.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training, your home for sports and orthopedic injury prevention, rehabilitation, and sports performance training. Visit us at peakptrochester.com.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
I got the eye of the tiger.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and as promised, Phil Steckley is back with us. Phil is the head athletic trainer at Western Ondacoit School District, and he is the guy who gets to see firsthand, not that we want him to see, these injuries that may take place out on the field of play or court. With, you know, these traumatic brain injuries and potentially the full concussions. You know, Phil, before we went to the break, I was introducing you and talking about this new report, which is called Sports-Related Concussions in Youth, Improving the Science and Changing the Culture. I think one of the things that constantly continues to come up is this whole idea of concussion. Is it fact? Is it fiction? And is it just because there's a lot of media attention, or are the number of concussions on the rise? What do you see, and what's your perspective from just being within the athletic trainer industry as to what's taking place both locally and nationally?
Well, that's a very good question, and very, very difficult question to answer. There's a lot of different factors that go into that. We are seeing, I think, in my opinion, a rise in head injuries, but one of the questions I always get asked is why does there seem to be so many more head injuries or concussions compared to, you know, when I was a kid or when I played sports? Well, I just think a big part of it is there's just more of an awareness now. They're being recognized better by even the students themselves, the athletes themselves, the coaches, and then the medical staff, if there is a medical staff or healthcare professional on board with that team. So, you know, in the past where we had maybe what we would call like a ding or someone getting their bell rung, which we really don't use those terms anymore, but those would be just kind of like, you know, you're okay, hold up four fingers, and then the athlete would say, yeah, I see three, and you'd be like, okay, go ahead, you're fine. We really don't treat those anymore, so we really don't treat them like that anymore. We really take all head injuries very, very seriously, even the mild or minor ones like that, so they're just being reported better. And, you know, there's more kids playing sports, and, you know, there's more kids training all year round. They're getting faster. They're getting stronger. So, you know, there's a greater incidence there for these injuries to happen. And, you know, the forces are much greater than they were even 5-10 years ago, especially, you know, in sports like soccer and hockey. So I think the combination of those factors, you're definitely seeing more traumatic brain injuries occur.
Phil, you know, we have talked to many concussion experts. I think the most noted is Dr. Robert Cantu, who has been on Youth Sports Now, and he has written many, many books on concussions and youth sports and athletes. He's also the guy who is one of the primary concussion consultants to the National Football League, as well as the NCAA, and now I think also the NBA. And, you know, in terms of medical terminology, he's done a wonderful job of explaining to our listeners what a concussion is. But maybe from your perspective and also, you know, you're at the high school level, which I think is very important for the kids and the parents to understand, you know, what actually is a concussion?
Oh, that's a very good question. You know, I get asked that all the time. Try to put it in most simple terms that people can understand, it's basically a traumatic force or direct or indirect blow to the head, which can cause a disturbance of your normal brain function. So in other words, you know, you get hit either in the side or the front of the head, your head gets pushed back or in a rotated fashion, and it may result in a change in your physical or cognitive or emotional or even sleep symptoms. So there's definitely a change going on there in your brain that controls normal daily function. So the other important thing to remember is it doesn't have to occur from a direct blow. I mean, you can have a force to your body where there's like a whiplash type effect, and what actually happens is the brain moves forward and backward within the skull, whether your head's decelerating or accelerating. So that can be a result of a concussion as well, an indirect force where there's no direct contact. So, you know, that's often thought of as never occurring, but it does actually occur quite often in sports.
So, Phil, we are speaking with Phil Steckley, who is the head athletic trainer at West Irondequoit School District. Phil, what are some of the things that, you know, regarding concussions that parents, coaches, you know, even other relatives can determine if their son or daughter maybe has a concussion and maybe they didn't see the hit or they were unaware of the hit? How can they tell?
Well, there's a number of different signs and symptoms to look for. There's actually, and I can go over a few of those, but first I can tell you that there's some really great websites out there through the CDC, the impact test, that lists a number of these signs and symptoms to look for. But first and foremost, you know, talking in terms of a parent evaluating their son or daughter, I think number one and first and foremost is just, you know, personality change. Are they acting abnormally as in regard to their normal daily fashion? You know, I think no one knows their son or daughter better than a parent. So if they just appear, you know, mentally foggy or dazed or stunned or confused or forgetting things, unable to answer questions clearly, or just shows a general behavior or personality change, I think some of those things are the first thing to look for. And then beyond that, some of the physical symptoms you commonly see, probably the number one physical symptom is headache, and then things like nausea, balance problems, double vision, sensitivity to light, or just feeling generally foggy. And so those are some common things that a parent or a coach can look for and evaluate to see, you know, is there one or more than one of these symptoms going on that may indicate that the athlete has a concussion?
So, Phil, you know, we're talking in this case with concussions or potential concussions, you know, that mom or dad and the coach check this out. And obviously, you know, those people have a heightened sense of concern for their kids. But why is it also important that if there is any possibility of a concussion, if there's any indication or thought process that maybe this athlete has received a concussion, that a health expert or a medical expert be the one to evaluate these possible concussions and head injuries?
Yes, very important if you can have a healthcare professional evaluate. It's a very, very complex process, and there are a number of significant tests that we perform on the sideline. One is called the SCAT-2 test. There's also specific balance tests and memory questions that we ask. So these are things kind of that we do every day that help us really determine the extent of the injury. As you may have discussed maybe in your with Dr. Cantu or some of your other professionals, that there really is no specific objective test, be it an MRI or a CT scan. Those really don't show if there's a concussion or not. There's really no test out there that shows that there's a concussion. So it's a very, very difficult process in trying to determine if the athlete actually has sustained one. But what we really do as healthcare professionals is go through these tests really chronologically from start to finish, looking for any signs of changes physically or cognitively. So there's also things that we do that we can do in-house, such as a neurocognitive-based test called the IMPACT test, which is a computerized test, and that's a pretty accurate, sensitive test that can tell us whether their, brain function has been altered or not. So what we do is we look at their scores after an injury. Once they've calmed down a little bit, their symptoms are improving, we can compare them to their baseline. So that's just another area that we have really access to that really the general public would not have.
Phil, we've also heard that in recent reports, and especially within the social media realm, that the concussion incidence with female athletes is much higher than either first reported. That's part one. But also part two is that many people are saying that the female athletes are actually more at risk for concussions. Can you speak to those two points?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tough question to answer. There's still ongoing research on that. We're not actually sure the exact reason why that occurs. There's been some theories, and one of the theories is that females, compared to males, don't have quite as strong of neck musculature, and so they're not able to brace themselves for an oncoming hit or blow to the head, and as a result, you know, there's more of a force being transferred to the brain. So, you know, that's common when you even think about knee injuries, too, in females. Their hamstrings aren't quite as strong or don't kick in quite as quickly as compared to the males. So same thing goes for, you know, their upper cervical spine neck muscles. For some reason, they're somewhat weaker compared to males. And then just overall general strength, when you're looking at, you know, female athletes pre-adolescent through adolescence, generally the number one deficit with those athletes from a physical standpoint is weak, you know, lack of strength or decreased strength in the core and extremities. So I think that definitely plays a factor. So one of the things we're trying to do here at our high school with our athletes is really focus on muscular strength, strength endurance, and really performing specific exercises to strengthen the neck muscles in hopes that would help reduce the severity of such injuries like concussion.
We are with Phil Steckley, who's the head athletic trainer at West Irondequoit School District, talking concussions, which seem to be, you know, more and more on the minds of many of the parents and coaches and sports administrators within the youth sports realm. Phil, can you tell me a little bit about, I've heard a little bit about it, but I really don't know much about the New York State Concussion and Awareness Act. What is that, and what's it supposed to be doing or will do?
Well, it's an act that was actually put into effect last July, July 1st, 2012, I believe. And basically what it says, if there is a concussion that's suspected, and we're talking more along the lines of, athletes from an athlete standpoint in the secondary school level is that they need to be seen by a healthcare professional within 24 hours, whether that's a nurse, an athletic certified athletic trainer, a physician. They need to see someone to be evaluated, and that person cannot return unless they are cleared by a physician, and they can't return within a 24-hour period unless they're cleared by a physician. And so that's mainly in place to protect the athlete, to make sure that they're safe and not returning to play before they're totally healed. And what we want to try to do there is prevent what's called a second impact or second incident to the brain, which can occur if one is not fully healed from that first concussion. They're more susceptible to a second, more serious concussion. So we're really trying to prevent that. And also what's involved in the Concussion Management Act is recommendation, and we follow this specific return to play protocol, which involves a six-stage protocol where the athlete will return to play gradually when they're symptom-free.
You know, Phil, Mike Maparella, who I know you know from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training, who works with us here at Youth Sports Now, Mike and I have had many conversations about this, and I would love to get your perspective on this. The fact of the matter is that if a professional athlete who is making millions and millions of dollars playing whatever professional sport that they're playing, if they get a concussion, first of all, they have tons of medical advice, tons of medical experts that are floating around them and training facilities and the whole thing. So it does make a little bit of a difference if they get a concussion versus a high school student. But the biggest issue in my mind, and I'd love your comment on this, is that a professional athlete who may be in their mid-30s or even late-30s who receives a concussion, you know, they're at the professional level and they're making the dough. Whereas a high school athlete who may receive a concussion, these are young people who have their entire lives ahead of them. And I firmly believe that we can't stress enough the importance of protecting the kids, and then if they receive a concussion, making sure that everything is perfect before they can come back because of that main factor. They have their whole lives ahead of them, and they may not turn out to be a professional athlete.
Exactly. I totally agree, and we really stress that to our student athletes here. We stress it and educate our parents that's very important because, as you may have discussed in your show, the chances of going professional, a high school athlete going professional, are very, very small. Even going on to play Division I, the chances of an athlete doing that is small. So, you know, these kids need their brains to function not only, at the high school level, but on to college and on to into a working career. So we really, really make that an important area that we stress, not only from, our high school athletes, but now we're sharing and educating to our younger athletes, our 7th or 8th graders. Even I think there's a specific need at the youth sports, because you really don't typically see medical coverage or an athletic trainer at a youth hockey game or a youth football game. It's usually either a coach taking care of the athlete or possibly sometimes an EMT is called in. But those are the kids we really, really need to focus on, because a lot of times those kids get undiagnosed, or they may have a mild head injury and it's not detected, and they go back and receive a second blow, and then they're having ongoing problems. So that's what we as a group, as athletic trainers in New York State, are really trying to promote, is getting more athletic trainers to cover these events, these youth sports, to make sure these kids are being evaluated properly and then supervised properly back to play. So that's a real big issue right now that we're really trying to focus on.
Phil Steckley, head athletic trainer at West Irondequoit School District. Phil, just as we wrap up today's interview about this important topic of concussion, two quick questions for you. I mean, one is, as an athletic trainer, is a concussion something that worries you the most when you see a player go down on the court or on the field or on the ice or wherever it may be? Is that something that worries you the most? And secondly, is, you know, what does the future hold? I mean, where do we go from here with this whole topic of concussions?
I don't know that a concussion would worry me the most as far as, you know, from a catastrophic injury type point of view. If you're talking emergency care of an athlete, you know, obviously head and neck are the most vital organs that you're trying to take care of. I think, you know, a cervical spine type injury would be a little more nerve-wracking to deal with. But even so, yeah, concussion is right up there because there can be, you know, definitely implications going on. But when you're an athletic trainer dealing with it, you're just kind of in the here and now. You really don't think about those things. You just think about doing the right thing at the right time, you know, getting the player off the field, evaluating them properly, and making sure that the coach and the parent is aware of what's going on and what they need to do to progress to get them better that day and then on down the road. As far as the future goes, that's a question that I ask myself every day. Where are we going to be 5-10 years from now, especially with a sport like football where the athletes seem to be getting stronger and faster, even at a youth level? Unfortunately, there is no helmet out there that will prevent a concussion. There is no mouth guard out there that will prevent a concussion. They've improved. They will help lessen the impact and hopefully lessen the severity of these concussions. But I think we're kind of at the end of that as far as, you know, we can't really go much further in trying to design a concussion-proof helmet. There are other things out there technology-wise that are on the horizon, such as sensors being placed in the helmets that will actually give you or alert the athletic trainer on the sideline, will alert the level of force that an athlete is receiving if he takes a blow to the head. And you can actually set thresholds with these sensors if you have an athlete that may, you know, have a history of head injury. You want to set a threshold that they shouldn't go beyond this level, and that will alert you. So those are some things that are happening right now. There's also actually a blood test that's being worked on by Dr. Bazarian through University of Rochester, which is in current research, and that hopefully will be a more of a substantial objective measure that physicians can use to determine if a concussion has taken place. Finally, I think the most important thing as far as where we're going in the future is that the coaches are aware of that there is a significant issue with head injuries, but that they teach proper technique in hitting and distributing a blow to another athlete, especially in contact sports, and that they're playing within the rules. You know, I think so often kids see how some of these professionals behave on TV and then they want to emulate them, and what it leads to is improper technique and which can lead to head injury. So the number one thing, I think, is just, you know, education of these younger kids right from Pop Warner on up to employ proper technique in their contact. And I think hopefully with that, we'll hopefully see kind of a leveling off of these types of injuries.
Great information, Phil. We appreciate your time, and I'm sure we'll have you back on as we continue to look into the issues of concussions and the facts and the myths and what the parents, the coaches, and the sports administrators need to know. We've been speaking with Phil Stackley, who is the head athletic trainer at West Irondequoit School District, and they are lucky to have him. Many schools do not have an athletic trainer, and having one, I think, is a great opportunity to make sure your kids are safe and healthy out there on the field of play. When we come back, it will be time for your peak performance, and our friend Mike Naparella will be here, and we're going to continue to talk about ACL injuries and proper protocols with the doctors to make sure that your athletes are staying healthy.
Tweet and mouse goes squeak, cow goes moo, frog goes croak, and the elephant goes toot.
Proudly conservative.
WYSL.
Rochester's home for America's morning show with Quinn and Rose. 92.1 FM and 1040 AM. WYSL, Avon, Rochester.
Little League is committed to the safety of its players, so background checks are mandatory for all volunteers. And that's why every local league gets 125 free national criminal background checks. Little League rules for a reason. For more info, go to littleleague.org.
intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
It's been an exciting night of Pee Wee hockey, Billy.
These kids have really played their hearts out tonight, Jim.
And now in the stands, two mums drop their mittens, and it looks like they want to go. It's Porter's mom and Smith's mom. Smith's mom gets in two right hands.
Porter's got a real big size advantage in this one.
Now Wilkinson's mom comes in from behind. Wilkinson posts Porter's cashmere sweater over her head.
I tell you, that's got to be one of the most unladylike things I've ever seen.
We got parents tearing up everywhere in the stands.
Absolute mayhem.
Relax. It's just a game. A message from USA Hockey.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery, from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance, 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it is time for the Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training segment, and our good friend Mike Naparella joins us again. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Doing great, Greg. How you doing?
Hey, you know, Mike, we've been talking about this, and some may say, well, you know, we've been talking about it a lot, and we really need to continue talking about the topic of ACL injuries, because it's a huge topic, almost as big as this whole concussion topic. So we finished up last week's segment on the ACL injuries, and we began to talk about the use of protocols. And as a patient or even a parent, I think that there's some sense of security in knowing that you guys at Peak Performance and other physical therapists, that they're doing what the surgeon wants done and they're doing it the right way. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. You know, as we began to talk last week about this same topic, you know, you've got to be on the same page as the doctor. Orthopedic surgeons, they're incredibly intelligent. They're caring professionals. They've been through really extensive training. I mean, think about it. Can there be much more trust that you'd ever put in a set of humans than to have a team of people put you to sleep, put these precise cuts into your skin, and make changes to your anatomy? You bet. I mean, patients, they want to know that you're on the same page as the person who just did all that cutting and drilling and screwing things back together for you. So, and we've got patients even who the surgeon actually gives them a copy of the protocol, so they're sort of following along, you know, in time as we are.
So with this protocol, you know, obviously the parents, you know, Mike, want to know, and of course the athletes too, want to make these good decisions about who to see for these sort of injuries. So when we talk about surgery like this, you know, no pun intended, is it a knee-jerk reaction that you might be able to think that whoever, you know, has the time, whoever has the best appointments, that they're the ones they should go to? And does this ACL surgery thing come down to if you saw the best doctor and the best PT, then you're going to be back the fastest?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, because you're totally right. We sort of, and we've talked about this before, we sort of live in this this microwave drive-through window sort of society where this idea of being the best or even being advanced often means who got to the finish line first or who did it in the shortest time possible. And sometimes we can make that mistake about, you know, choosing a physician or choosing a physical therapist, that quicker is always better. I mean, orthopedics, there's been this increasing trend, even in the research, to recognizing that, and it's not with all injuries or surgeries, but, you know, in a lot of cases, in ACLs included, that early mobilization versus, you know, like prolonged bed rest and being very conservative and very early strengthening and other exercises often leads to an earlier return to getting back to life. You know, whether that be a sport or whether it just be day-to-day activities, and even for the more mature population, it's about getting back to work. So it's true that sometimes, you know, being more advanced means that you can get back quicker, but you got to be really careful of swinging that pendulum too far. And there's a risk of sort of this, you know, I can name that tune and you can fill in the blank. I can get you back in 3 months. And, you know, someone else says, well, I'll get you back in 2.5 months. And we've got to be very careful that those time frames of becoming shorter and shorter aren't compromising recovery, because sometimes we as a society look for, you know, it equaling advanced if you're doing it in a shorter time. So a surgeon who offers, you know, the earliest return to playing time, or the therapist who says, you know, we can get you back to sports practice at, you know, whatever time, we don't want to be playing the name that tune game. So those people who are doing that aren't necessarily the best or more advanced. They may be, but they may not be. And there's really a fine line between looking at the evidence that's out there, you know, developing a sound protocol or a plan for the recovery. You know, we got to have that concern for waiting for the biology of healing to take place. But, and I really want to emphasize this, making sure that we treat every single injured athlete, whether it's surgical or non-surgical, and in the case we're talking about today, Greg, ACL reconstructions, that we treat them individually. I'll give you a quick example here. I had a lacrosse player over the summer. We'll call him Johnny. And he was up at the school turf, and he's doing these multi-directional hopping drills and this deceleration training for unexpected reactions that we had him working on. And he was up there with another athlete, a friend. We'll call her Mary. And she had an ACL, you know, fixed just a few weeks around the time when Johnny had. And she was doing some running drills, and she was doing some basic agility-type stuff. And she was asking Johnny, you know, what are you doing? And they started talking about their ACL rehab drills and what these were doing, getting ready to go back to sports. But she hadn't really worked on the single-leg landing. She hadn't really worked on those at-risk positions. She was just doing sort of this protocoled sort of basic agility stuff, and she hadn't done any reaction work. And she was really surprised at, you know, why are you doing those things where you're having to react suddenly? You know, she'd point her finger in one direction, or she'd call out switch when he's doing a drill, and he had to react to that. And she wasn't doing anything like that. She was doing all these pre-planned sort of drills, standard things. And Johnny, you know, he came back telling me he was even worried about her, because she's getting ready to go back to play, and he could see, you know, even as just an athlete, he wasn't really a skilled a coach or a therapist or an athletic trainer, he could see that she wasn't really ready. So we have to be really careful of living on a protocol. So at Peak Performance, we're totally happy to get people back as quickly as possible. And we want to do that for everyone's sake. We don't want to delay it longer than it needs to be, but it never can be at the compromise of quality. And so we're not in the contest of doing it the quickest. We want to do it the best. And sometimes, you know, the challenge is that oftentimes a physician or a therapist will offer out to somebody, hey, you're going to get back in 5 months to playing, or 6 months, or something like that. But we really want to be careful of getting in a position where we have to eat our words. Tell that patient later on, you know what, physically you're actually not ready, even though it's 5 months. Or, you know, we're going to follow the protocol and let him go back, maybe in spite of poor test results. You know, we can't have that. And or another case, as we've talked about in the show before, Greg, maybe not even testing them the right way. So we get this false sense of security because we don't think outside the box enough. We get a basic strength test. They look like they passed, but it wasn't functional enough. And the athlete's actually going back at risk because we didn't prep them right.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mike, because it's not about the ACL, but to your exact point about, you know, getting back in time, I was listening to some other radio commentators today, and they were talking about the injury to the Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and they were questioning whether it's the shoulder or whether it's the clavicle or whether it's the collarbone. And it was amazing to me that these experts that are our sports broadcasters were, first of all, making all these speculations, and secondly, before they even knew what the injury was, they had experts on talking to the experts about how long is he going to be out? Is this going to be a 3-week injury or a 6-week, or is this, you know, a season ending? I know it's not with ACL, but it was amazing to me that they were talking about that. So typically with you and with an ACL reconstruction, you know, patients always want to know when they're likely to go back to playing. Do you give them a time frame, or is it very, very much customized to who that athlete is?
Well, in terms of giving them a time frame, it's sort of yes and no. I mean, if for example, this is a surgeon that gave us a protocol, and we have this sort of time frame that they've put out on paper in terms of really what we would think of it as the biology of healing. You know, when's the earliest I would allow somebody to do whatever? And let's say we're talking about starting the running and agility program, and then from there we can sort of imagine how long might it take for someone to actually get back to the point they actually do drills and practice. And then from there, you know, what's the actual first time they'd be allowed in scrimmaging where contact and reaction to other bodies and multiple players on the field and the court would happen. So we can sort of anticipate that. Well, we'll let them know when that physician said, here's the earliest you could begin that activity. But really what we want to tell them is, here's the thing, it's not a contest of how quickly you go back. When you go back, I want you to stay back. I don't want you to get excited about going back and then really have not prepared you well enough. But time has passed. And based on time, we've all committed to, hey, you're going to play by 5 months. Well, if we're too hard on that, we're too specific about that, then we can get into trouble because they may not have the strength or the dynamic balance or the reaction ability. And then when they go out, we sort of rob them of the excitement that they had because we have to pull them back out because either they're hurting again or they're just doing poorly, or we see that their other leg's starting to hurt because it's starting to cheat for the ACL leg that really wasn't ready yet. So what we'll do, Greg, is we'll let them know what that earliest time frame might be with the caveat that there's a lot of tests they need to pass first. So we would say it's much more of a criterion-based return versus just purely some time frame on a protocol. And we're very quick to be on the phone with the surgeons, and certainly we have paperwork that we're sending, reevaluation reports that we do, when we get closer to those time frames so that, you know, we're all functioning off of the best data we can provide in terms of, hey, someone might have really good strength, but now when we do a hop drill or a lunging test or a change of direction movement and we see they can't control that knee, well, that's really critical. It doesn't matter that you've passed the strength test. You have to also have some dynamic balance, some control. We can't have you going back with your knee twisting and buckling in weird directions, but in the simple terms, hey, your quads and hams are strong again. Well, that's just not good enough. So we've got to make sure we're thorough in that, and that's why we never want to base something, you know, purely just on time.
So, you know, Mike, there's always good and bad in everything that we do. And from a PT's perspective, what's the good and the bad of these protocols? I know you addressed this in your blog from last week's show, but let's tell our listeners again the good and the bad.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, the protocols, you know, surgeons, you know, they use different graphs. You know, they have different time frames for recovery. They have different even exercises or activities that some will allow and not allow. Certainly, some will start at 3 months running, some will wait till 5. Some allow sports by, let's say, 5 months. Others might make you wait till 7, even from a simple biology standpoint. So there's not full agreement among all of them. And so we really need to respect that each one may have their own approach to how they'd like this recovery to go. And so it's critical that, like we said earlier, that we are on the same page as them. You know, they went and did all this work to fix that knee. In this case, we're talking about ACLs. And we've really got to respect, you know, what time frame they want for healing and when they want certain forces to be seen by that tissue or not. So, you know, on the good side, it really helps us tremendously when we see a protocol because it gives me a reference point for those earliest time frames they might let somebody do something. I'll give you an example. If a protocol were to say, hey, you're not allowed to climb stairs using your surgery leg until 4 weeks out after your ACL was done, well, that really helps us prepare. And so if that young athlete is, you know, at 2.5 or 3 weeks out, I can begin doing things knowing that, hey, listen, a regular stair is about 8 inches high in most cases. And we know that climbing up the stairs is the safest place to start versus going down. Going up the stairs, your hip and butt muscles, you know, get to be a best friend to the knee. And going downstairs, the knee is sort of left on its own a lot more. The hip isn't as much of a helper. So we would allow somebody to climb upstairs first. Well, I certainly don't want that athlete to all of a sudden walk into the doctor's office at a four-week follow-up, and they've been walking on flat ground, and all of a sudden the doctor says, well, on my protocol, you're allowed to climb stairs now. So all of a sudden the athlete goes from walking on flat surfaces to now doing a single leg squat motion through maybe 90 or more degrees of motion to climb up and down the stairs, depending on how tall they are. That's a big change. Well, if I know that from their protocol, I can begin preparing them with 2-inch step-ups and 4-inch step-ups, and in those weeks preceding the point where the doctor is going to release them potentially, or the protocol says, hey, this is now the first time where I would let you climb up a stair if you're able to do it well. Well, I can help you in some lower-level activities to prep that. But, you know, the challenge is for physical therapists, I think, is we have to be really careful of getting too reliant on the protocol, because we can't have the physical therapist who's guiding your rehab become really complacent, and then you don't start to, you're not thinking for yourself all the time. So, I mean, there's no way a written protocol can account for every single exercise choice or every exercise variation that's needed. You know, they can't account for the changes that would go from, in the very beginning, we're going to use really light loads, we're going to do a lot of repetitions, and then at some point we're going to transition to higher loads and lesser repetitions. Well, when do you do that? Well, the protocol doesn't follow every single individual's physiology and biology. One person may have a lot of swelling and inflammation. We have to do that more slowly. Someone else may lose their swelling really quickly, have very little pain. They're doing awesome. We can push the envelope a bit more on them. So the protocols really can't allow for that. We have to be really careful of just sitting there and looking at dates on a piece of paper and then doing things based on time and not based on how they're doing. And certainly, you know, the biomechanical things that we talk about are a huge thing. So, I mean, at peak performance, we're not looking at this like we're rehabbing, you know, just an ACL. We're really thinking of it as, you know, this is someone's body. You know, it's a system that we're rehabbing. And we've got to get beyond just these microscopic, telescopic approaches of what exercises and things can I do to the ACL. And we have to remember it's sort of this triangular, three-dimensional approach. We're thinking mind, body, and spirit. You know, we know we're dealing with the body. But we also, Greg, and this isn't on the protocol, right, but we also have to remember that we're dealing with the mental side. We've got to make sure that we're educating that patient. They've got to learn things about their knee. They've got to learn things about what is a risk and what's not a risk. I can't have an ACL kid, and we're talking about ACLs. This is true of everybody. You can't have a kid going back to that early sport practice, and I'm not there to hold their hand. The athletic trainer may not be there to hold their hand. But in the middle of a practice, they've got some decisions to make as to whether a certain drill is appropriate or not. And we can't list out every single drill the coach may come up with and tell them, you know, hey, that's appropriate, hey, that's not appropriate. So there's a mental side where we want to educate them. They have to learn things about that. Well, that's not on the protocol. And another thing that's not on the protocol certainly is the spirit side of it, that emotional side, that confidence, the ability to go out there and sort of manage that balance between being a little cocky and being disregarding, which we don't want, but also being too fearful. You know, we can't have an athlete going out there afraid that every move they're going to make, they're going to blow their ACL out again. And so there's a lot of things that we're trying to manage through this, and all those things just aren't, you know, they're not there in the protocols.
Well, Mike, you know, these protocols, I think it's so very important, and we may have to even continue this because I do know that we've got some questions on our website about protocols, and we may want to discuss this again next week with just maybe not just with ACLs, but protocols in general, so yep. That the patients, the athletes, the parents can all understand this a little bit better. And we'll make sure that those questions from our website are, in fact, answered on these protocols. Mike, real quick, tell our listeners as we end the peak performance segment how to get a hold of you, both website and phone number, and where you're located.
Absolutely. Well, we're at 161 East Commercial Street in East Rochester. And so it's very nicely situated, about a mile literally down, coming off the exit from the 490 East Rochester exit. You come all the way down the street. You're right at our parking lot where that street ends. and you just make a quick left and a right, and you're in our parking lot. You can see the building from the end of the street there. And so they can give us a call at 218-0240. That's our phone number. That's 218-0240. And if they want to learn a little bit more about us and how we do things, they can check out our website at www.peakptrochester.com.
Great. Well, Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. As always, great information. Mike, thank you very much, and we'll continue our conversations on helping these athletes and their parents make the smartest decisions possible. And we will see you again next week, buddy.
Take care, Greg.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. When we come back, some final thoughts from my dugout.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Little League, where dreams are made for children, where baseball's meaning is much more than the score, where a moment can last a lifetime. The Challenger Division. Log on to littleleague.org for more information.
Sports performance training has evolved. Many athletes have taken advantage of sports vision training with Dr. Fred Edmonds and haven't looked back. Seeing a need for athletes to incorporate visual performance enhancement into their training, Dr. Fred established the Extreme Sight Performance Clinic to offer specialized sports vision care. Athletes are invited to test their visual strengths and weaknesses with a visit to the Extreme Sight Performance Clinic at the Sports Center on MCC campus. They will participate in a battery of standardized visual skills tests. Based on this unique and comprehensive visual performance evaluation, Dr. Fred develops an enhancement training program tailored to each individual athlete. For more information about the Extreme Sight Performance Clinic, visit extremesight.com or call 585-880-4818 today. Extreme Sight, a proud supporter of Youth Sports Now Radio.
It's been an exciting night at Pee Wee Hockey, Billy.
These kids have really played their hearts out tonight, Jim.
And now in the stands, two moms drop their mittens, and it looks like they want to go. It's Porter's mom and Smith's mom. Smith's mom gets in two right hand.
Porter's got a real big size advantage in this one.
Now Wilkinson's mom comes in from behind. Wilkinson posts Porter's cashmere sweater over her head.
I tell you, that's got to be one of the most unladylike things I've ever seen.
We got parents tearing up everywhere in the stands.
Absolute mayhem.
Relax. It's just a game. A message from USA Hockey.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training, where you and your young athlete are treated like professionals and cared for like family. Go beyond traditional physical therapy. Experience Peak Performance. PeakPTRochester.com.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Everyone has heard the saying, think before you speak. The youth athletes of today, from preteen leagues right up through college athletics, need to add to this age-old statement with the following. And don't tweet, post, or text anything before thinking either. We live in a world that has been overrun with 24/7 news cycles, immediate reactionary statements, and even conversations that were once private are now known to the world. As I try not to sound like an old coach, parent, or even teacher, I'm very comfortable sounding like a new age internet and social media preacher. Players need to know that what they do and say via the social media world can not only hurt others, but themselves, as these things last forever in the Facebook and Twitter sphere. Young athletes and social media don't always go together. This past year alone, thousands of high school and college athletes have been reprimanded, suspended, and even kicked off their sports teams due to what they said in the social media realm. Many of these incidents related to comments that were made about their coaches, the sports administrators, and in some cases, what they posted about their own teammates. Don't get me wrong, the social media world can certainly help players, especially those in high school, as they look for academic and athletic scholarships. However, student athletes may not realize that as much as they are on various social media sites, so too are the high school, colleges, coaches, and recruiters, meaning that what they post is also seen. One incident that took place in New York City ended the career of a very talented athlete as he posted negative things on Twitter and Facebook about his coach and the decisions made during games. Not only was this disrespectful, but it broke all the rules as the coach had players sign a social media policy agreement before the season started. Another incident forced a college to rescind a scholarship offer as the student athlete was found to have been making derogatory comments about the college and the season they were having. Making it worse was the fact that this student athlete was also talking publicly via social media to another school to see if they would better the offer that was made by the previous school. Look, no one is perfect, let alone teenagers, who today have so much peer pressure, parental pressure, and even societal pressures, all in the name of success. Peter Shankman, a social media guru and a public relations expert, once said in a workshop that one should never post or tweet anything you wouldn't want your grandmother to see. Today's student athletes could and should take heed and never post anything that they don't want a coach, athletic director, or a recruiter to see. Coaches, athletic directors, and youth sports programs are increasingly banning social media during the season or at the very least stating up front in a social media policy an agreement that all players must sign. Parents are asked to assist in programs like these so that the players don't jeopardize their seasons or their careers. In my book, education is far more effective than policy. Players should be taught about the pitfalls of social media and the way platforms can help in schoolwork, athletic training, and their future in sports. What's good for the players is doubly as good for coaches and parents. Coaches know and need to take the issues up directly with the player and not through social media. The same is true for parents. Let's not allow one tweet to ruin a whole flock of rising student athletes achieve success. And that's The View from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.